I'm Ryan Kelly with TheHomeLoanExpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert, LLC.
Dang it, Laurel. We didn't get bread. We didn't get bread, Laurel. Can you run and get us bread? I needed bread, and it's not going to be there when we get off at 10 o'clock.
It is November. It is not supposed to be. Even flurries. We're not supposed to have this in November.
It is early, isn't it?
I didn't realize we were supposed to have flurries. My little guy, I did a little video on the way up here this morning, and I'm going to shoot it to him before he goes to school. He's going to be so excited.
He's not. You're going to send it to him. He's going to get that video, and he's going to think he's out of school. And then you're going to say, no, little man, it melted.
Well, it might be out of school.
He's not going to be out of school.
Have you seen what they call school for now?
I have.
Minor accumulation done away.
I have. But unless James Spann or somebody like that is on right now with wall-to-wall coverage, there's no way.
I didn't even get a chance to do the odds.
Has anybody canceled yet?
No.
Rockstar, would this be considered a dusting?
Yes. If it's, I mean, I saw flakes in my headlights, man. I'm sorry.
No.
Can't make it to school. I live on a hill.
Slippery road.
We just sent out video.
We have a freeze warning till tomorrow, so.
we just sent out video of the Ram truck covered in snow out front here.
Well, I think covered is a bit of an overstatement, Jim.
There was part of that back left rail that was covered.
I mean, it's November, man. I'm okay with this in January, but I'd like to think we could at least get to Christmas without the first sign of snow in this state.
Yeah.
That's why I live in the South, man.
At least Thanksgiving Day. I don't know if it's snow. I debated all the way in if it's snow or if it was drizzling.
It's flurries.
It was floating water is what it looked like to me. It was spitting snow.
Cloud dandruff.
That's what it was. If you need firewood, if you've lost power or anything like that, please call us and we'll work through this this treacherous situation this morning. Seriously,
to sit on 280 to sell the firewood?
Those dudes were
out. He's got the jacket.
No, yeah. The 280 firewood guys were out like 2 or 3 weeks ago. No, they got an early start this year.
You know, and I hate, you know, I shouldn't hate this. Oh, but Michael Quick sending us, it's snowing really bad. Dusting really bad down in Chilton County. Look at that.
My word.
Hello, man. Thank you. Maggie gave me the, oh, hey, can you go get some firewood yesterday afternoon?
I can go chop some.
Y'all didn't draw straws?
I was like, what is this? Little House on the Prairie? Turn the heat up. Firewood.
I guess I'll do it after work.
I mean, go get firewood. Oh, so I went got one of those little to-go typical.
Did you get one of the bags at Walmart? You buy 6 logs for $10?
Directors right to get the Duraflame, didn't you?
Yeah, and I went into local grocery store where Miomi, my favorite wine's on sale. I'll grab 2 bottles of that and one of those to-go Insta wood that
you got a splinter out of it, didn't you?
Exactly. If you play Lance's Lock every day or occasionally, last night was one of those easy wins. I'll read you word for word with Maction in college football last night. What I got from a guy, a buddy of mine, BC. Says, hey, I missed today's lock on Wednesday. Can you fill me in? I said, no problem, man. Ohio versus Buffalo. He writes back, word for word now. Thank you. That seems strange.
Wow.
Almost like the wrong team is favored.
Look out.
And I said, I know. Solich is a solid coach, though. And then, boom, it was never cool.
Why did you not let me know this, Dunaway?
You told us in a break, though. You felt really good.
Yeah, I felt
about
really
this.
Good about it. And, you know, I was watching Lock It In yesterday afternoon, and Clay Travis, who is one of the biggest laymans. I mean, this guy is a public player, and Cousin Sal, both heavy on Buffalo.
That made you feel good.
The underdog made me feel really, really good. But, yeah, 52-17. I mean, and we talked about the balance of this Bobcat offense and a team that was averaging 49 points per game in their home games undefeated. They go out, they get 52, 646 yards, 5 Buffalo turnovers. And Tyree Jackson, as good as he's been for Buffalo this year, 9-21, a couple of turnovers. Just a bad performance from Buffalo, but Ohio looked that good last night.
Yeah, they really did, and they blow out in Maction last evening. We get to football tonight in the NFL, where good football, Packers and Seahawks. It's on Fox 720, weather permitting, out there in Seattle this evening. And for Green Bay, it's a push now that they've got to make if they're going to make a run for the playoffs. Their schedule has been so difficult coming out of the bye week. This is put up or shut up time starting tonight for the Green Bay Packers.
Well, you know, it's hard to believe in 2014 this was your NFC Championship game, and you're talking about elite coaches. I shouldn't say elite coaches with Mike McCarthy. You're talking about an elite coach. You're talking about elite quarterbacks, and now we're talking about an elimination game in early November because you've got Green Bay sitting at 4-4-1. You've got Seattle at 4-5. Loser is probably out. You look at how deep the NFC is right now, and you look at Seattle. When we talk about Green Bay and how good Aaron Rodgers has been, even with a brace. I mean, it's hard to believe 17 touchdowns, only one interception. But you look at Seattle, 4-5. Their five losses all by one possession. Wow. They've been right there.
Green Bay could still win their division. Seattle can't, but Green Bay could still win their division. So But Lance is right. If Seattle loses this one, you're 4-6. You getting an NFC wild card is going to be really, really difficult with the likes of Carolina. Or the Saints, whoever doesn't win that division, maybe whoever doesn't win the North. So, you know, this is a tough spot, and it's also got division ramifications. If Seattle loses this, I know Lance knows it. If Seattle loses this and his Rams win Monday night, they've won the division already in November.
What's crazy is the Packers, who would be my favorite place for Le'Veon Bell to end up, by the way, him and Aaron Rodgers together. But the Packers are 0-4 on the road this year. They have been nothing out of Lambeau Field. 4-0-1 at home, 0-4 on the road.
Well, good thing this is an easy place to play, right?
Yeah, just Seattle.
You know, and Brown, you talked about last week was one of the best Thursday night games, matchup that we've ever seen.
The game turned out not to be all that great.
Well, this is one of the best 500 and sub-500 matchups I think we've ever seen. I mean, because this is really quality teams. I mean, seriously.
That's a weird
disclaimer. The Packers are a pretty good 4-4 team. Yeah. Seattle's a good 4-5 team. So, I mean, I'm kind of excited about this Thursday night matchup.
It's what you get in the NFL. You get a bunch of teams that are around 500 that are pretty good teams. I mean, you get that in the NFL. We're as college fans, we look at 5-5 as a bunch of crap. In the NFL, those are pretty good teams that are at 5-5 at 6-4 at this time of year.
Well, and we like seeing good quarterback play. And again, you've got elite quarterbacks here. I mean, you look at Russell Wilson, a guy, a third-round selection out of Wisconsin back in 2012. He's won more than 66% of his 117 career starts. I mean, this is a guy that should have two Super Bowl victories. Only got one. We know the infamous call down there on the goal line, yes, from Pete Carroll, but still one of the elite quarterbacks.
Speaking of 500, we get that tonight. And I don't know if you got a lock on this one, LT, but I will point out one fact. As Florida Atlantic, 5-5, North Texas, 7-3, a little disappointment for Lane Kiffin. This game is not in Boca. It's in Denton, Texas.
And I bet it's cold in Denton tonight.
Yeah, you don't think of Denton, Texas being cold weather, but it is.
You want a weather forecast?
No,
it may not
right
be snowing.
Here.
Okay.
28 degrees at kick for the boys from Boca Raton tonight.
That's a bad formula for FAU.
Yeah, that is.
5-5 FAU on the road at North Texas tonight. North Texas -3.5 in that game. That's one of a handful of college games. That also includes Tulane and Houston out of the American as they play in Houston. Tulane's 5-5, trying to get bowl eligible. Pretty good football team, actually 4-2 in the American. But Houston, at one point, we thought was going to be the team to beat UCF when they got to the AAC championship game, and they have hit the skids ever since Derek King went on that unbelievable game performance he had on pretty much national TV in the big game he had for Houston. He continues to play fairly good, but this team has lost a couple in a row.
And you know who right now is in the AAC championship game, if it were played today, is SMU.
SMU, yeah.
It's not even going to be used.
Sonny Dyke.
Well, you look at the West, and look, the AAC has had three different division champions in 3 years, and this year SMU, Houston, and Tulane are all tied at 4-2, but SMU has beaten both Houston and Tulane. So they do hold the tiebreaker right now. I still think Houston's going to get there. I think Houston more than likely wins tonight. And Derek King is a guy that's got 48 total touchdowns. This offense has not been the problem. It's been the defense without Ed Oliver. I mean, three consecutive games he hasn't played. More than likely, he will not play again tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Seems like he's on that plan now to protect himself for the NFL draft. But they lose to Texas Tech.
And I've seen him drop all the way back to Mel Kiper's big board yesterday that came out. Quinnen Williams, number 2 overall.
Number 2?
All the way down to number 8 is Ed Oliver.
Well, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong about this. I did my Football Writers Association All-American ballot this week, and I did not put him on my list.
Ed Oliver?
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. He hasn't played half the season.
Yeah. The guy's not playing.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure I was right about that.
It's too late to ask. Why don't you ask before you send it in?
I know.
Well, there's too many good defensive linemen,
too. I don't want him laughing at me at the office, the home office.
No, we talked about this the other day. If you do an All-American defensive lineman, I mean, it's really difficult to do. Quinnen Williams has to be on it.
Yeah, you only have four spots.
You only got four spots.
I mean, you could just take Alabama, Clemson, and Mississippi State, and you could probably form
and one. Even then, you've left off two pretty good guys up at Michigan.
Yeah, the Michigan. Yeah. Michigan's got two.
Yeah.
And Tillery's pretty good from Notre Dame.
Again, this is probably the deepest unit in college football, and without guys like Nick Bosa, who hasn't really played this year.
Who would have been in the
TCU,
mix.
Would have been in the mix, and Ed Oliver. You know, it really gets interesting.
Yeah, but to your point on that defense, Houston's three losses this year, they score 49 in a loss to Texas Tech. Texas Tech had 63. They score 31 in a loss to SMU. SMU had 45. That's their one of their poor performances in maybe their lowest scoring game of the year. And then they lose 59-49 last week to Temple.
Yeah. They're not getting a lot of stops, are they?
You want me to give you a weird stat about Houston? This is one of the best home teams over the last few years in college football. They're 22-3 since 2014 at home.
They built that on-campus stadium. It's pretty sweet, I think.
And it's been 31 games since they've lost a home game by more than a single score. So this is a team that really plays well at home. And again, hosting Tulane is a kind of a healthy favorite here. But again, the defense not nearly what it once was when you had Ed Oliver on that defensive front.
All right. So that's part of our night tonight in football. Last night in basketball, Ooh. LeBron. Oh, where are you going first?
I thought you were going to the college game.
I'm going to get to that.
Okay, go ahead.
First in the NBA, LeBron James and the Lakers starting to find their chemistry together. 126-117, Lakers beat the Trailblazers. LeBron passes Wilt Chamberlain, now fifth all-time in scoring. Rockstar cut number 10. LeBron James, you know, you play so long, you start passing these legends, it seems to wash over you a little bit. Like, I mean, passing Wilt Chamberlain, I mean, you're now fifth all-time in scoring. That seems like a big deal. I assume LeBron thinks at some point he's going to be number one overall, right?
I don't think he'll get there.
You don't think
he'll get to one?
That's a lot to chase down. What is that?
Kareem, I mean, it's almost, it's over 38,000 points.
Yeah.
And when you look at right now, I guess his next guy that he will pass will be Michael Jordan. And that's looking like that will be in January.
Okay, so that's a big deal.
Yeah.
But for Kareem, it's going to be some time. And I forgot exactly how they project this thing out, but LeBron's going to have to play for years.
Oh, so like he can't do it in 5 years?
It might be 5 years.
Okay. I thought it was reachable for him. But last night, I saw more people excited about winning a CMA award last night than LeBron passing Wilt. Here's LeBron.
Well, I mean, for me, I don't know. I don't know how I feel right now. I'm happy we were able to get another win. But anytime my name is mentioned with some of the greats that played this game, you know, I always think back to my hometown of where I come from, how far I've come. So that's it for me.
I like that sentiment, though.
The hometown I come from, isn't that just like thanking God and the agency when you win those country music awards?
All the guys back in the shop.
Yeah, all the guys back in the shop in NASCAR.
Yeah,
LeBron did thank God last night.
Good. Yeah. But I will say this about LeBron. He is always held his hometown very close. I mean, LeBron's not a guy who's forgotten where he came from.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that's why people were so critical when he left Cleveland, which wasn't fair. You know, I mean, he played obviously his glory years in Cleveland and left for a little bit and came back, won him a championship. I think he gave Cleveland all he could give them.
I saw a guy on Twitter say the only bad part about this is those awful Laker uniforms they were wearing last night are now part of history.
The purple.
And the purple and the black, and it's got Los Angeles Lakers on it. It's not the old school Lakers.
Yeah,
uniform.
I mean, the Lakers, I've never liked the alternate whites they wear on Sundays now. I mean, the Lakers have good traditional, you know, purple and gold uniforms. Just stick with them.
Yeah, I will tell you those, and Brown, you know how I feel about this. I think a lot of people do. The off-brand sports gear you get at some places, I won't name places.
Well, that looks like something you get at Champs.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to,
Fair?
Yeah, jump right in. Where's Jim talking?
It's amazing you're in sales.
I'm not really concerned they're going to have a sponsorship on here.
Is Champ still in business?
I don't know.
Well, I hope so.
It's amazing.
Was that what you were thinking, though?
I'm not going
to. Hammer it home, Nancy. Yeah, hammer it home.
Yeah, let's name them all.
Say it, Jim.
Is that Hoopa Stank? No?
Random.
Hoopa Stank.
Who's that?
Did you think that's Mother Love Bone, but still, Hoopa Stank.
That was a random one to ask.
Well, I mean,
I don't blame you for not knowing who it is. I wouldn't have known.
I think they have that kind of sound, right?
They got those guitars.
That rhythm.
Yeah. Got that one drummer that plays with the boom, 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 boom.
It's going to be one of those days. I know. I know. I can tell already.
It's my favorite guy.
When it snows, you guys are always on me. Always.
It's Thursday, Brown.
More basketball later today. We're about to get into last night's action, but Alabama in one of those holiday-like tournaments in Charleston where they play Northeastern today, 1 o'clock afternoon game. You can watch it, actually, on ESPNU. Auburn demolishes Mississippi College, as you would expect last night. Number 9 team in the country, Auburn, 103-52. 6 people in double figures, including Austin Wiley. UAB rolls through New Orleans, 75-68 last night. Lewis Sullivan with a big night, 11-10. Samford beat Miles, 66-57. Radford.
Marty's place.
Marty Smith with us at 7 o'clock. Radford beats Notre Dame. That's got to be a wake-up for Notre Dame. And I don't even think Radford had one of its better players. And then the big story last night, we told you to watch it because it was going to be a good game. Number 18, Michigan. Number 8, Villanova in a rematch of the national championship game. And Michigan, 73, Villanova, 46.
Yeah, I don't know how to explain this because, you know, even with Villanova losing maybe their top 4 players to the draft in the first 33 picks of last year's draft, you've still got guys like Phil Booth and Eric Paschal that are back, and Jay Wright has built a program that has won 2 of the last 3 national championships. And to open this new pavilion and only your second game and to lose by 27, and we're also talking about a Michigan that lost 3 of its top 4 scorers.
Yeah, it was 44-17 at the half. They ran them early.
Yeah.
They didn't pull away late.
10-2, first 5 minutes. I mean, it was over.
Charles Matthews with 19 to lead the way for him.
The 2 most impressive teams I watched last night were Big Ten teams because Indiana smoked the top 25 team in Marquette there at Assembly Hall. They look pretty good. I mean, that Big Ten early on, I mean, Duke looks like the best team by far, but the Big Ten early on looks like a pretty good conference. But
back to Auburn, though, real quick, over Mississippi College. And I know it's Mississippi College, but you don't even see this in the Globetrotters and the Generals. No, it was a 52-5 run.
Right.
They held Mississippi College 11 minutes without scoring. When's the last time you guys saw a 52-5 run?
It's hard to pull off.
You just don't see that. Now, Auburn's sweet spot's coming up, right? Because they play...
They head to Maui.
Yeah, they play in one of the prestigious tournaments in all of basketball. And not that that will tell us if Auburn's going to contend for a Final Four trip or not, but you're really able to, and they're going to be in the tournament, so you don't even need marquee wins really early on. They're going to get those. They already have one against Washington. But when you get out there and you're able to get to Maui and test cut your teeth on that kind of schedule, that Auburn's about to get?
Well, we'll learn a lot about them, yeah, there's no doubt.
It'll be a chance to sharpen that iron.
I wonder, and I don't know, you know, obviously Bruce Pearl is pulling all the right strings right now. I wonder when Austin Wiley starts. You know, he played a little bit against Washington, 16 minutes last night, scored 18 points in 16 minutes. I think Mississippi College's tallest guy was like 6'6", so they didn't have a heck of an answer at all, but I wonder when he sneaks Wiley into that starting 5 to see what it looks like.
And for you Auburn fans, that Maui trip, of course, is next week, and you can start watching their games from Maui on Monday afternoon when they play Xavier, but you're out there with the Dukes of the world, and could be fun to see Auburn and Duke get after it. Football season, though, Scoobs is next with us. Hey, Scoobs, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, Jim? How are you?
Fantastic.
That's great. Good morning to the roundtable. I hope y'all are enjoying the dusting.
Oh, yeah. It's terrific.
How many people you think bought some bread and milk last night?
No, this wasn't forecast. If Span or somebody had said we were getting this, they would have wiped the stores out.
I hear you. All right. I got 3 questions, 2 about Alabama, 1 about the pros. So I'm going to start with the pros. I read something the other day. What do y'all guys think about, I don't see it happening, but do you think Le'Veon Bell could benefit Dallas?
Dallas?
Yep.
I just think Zeke is just such a focal point of that offense. I think more so, you know, getting a guy like Amari Cooper, I think they still need help at the receiver position.
Well, even as a receiver out of the backfield, you know, he's not bad at that.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, look, along with David Johnson and Todd Gurley, he's the best in the game at that.
But I do think one of the criticism Garrett gets now is not getting Elliott the ball enough. And if you've got Le'Veon Bell, that's only going to, you know, magnify that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I had read that, and I was curious about y'all's thoughts.
I would like to see him, as I said earlier, Scoobs. I'd like to see him in Green Bay and give Aaron Rodgers one of those type weapons so that maybe we could see another deep run from Aaron Rodgers. I think another great place for him, I know you love Russell Wilson. It was Mike Keith on the show yesterday, would love to see him in Seattle, thinks he would fit in well there.
You know, it's interesting. Their philosophy has become, I mean, they're leading the NFL right now in rushing. But I think with what you've got with Russell Wilson at the quarterback position, I think the dynamic, bringing a guy like Le'Veon, of course, I don't want to see him in Seattle. I don't want to see him in Green Bay. Keep him in the AFC.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think the window is closing and you're the Atlanta Falcons and you could somehow make a long-term deal work, I don't know if you could financially make it work, but yeah. The Falcons could be somebody like that. You don't really need him in New Orleans. I'd like to see him paired with a really good quarterback and so that you can get a little quality. We missed a whole year of Le'Veon Bell, and I really do like him when he plays on Sunday. I think he's a really good player.
Yeah, I think in Philadelphia needs help in the backfield right now. I think Philadelphia would be huge.
Hell, at this point, I'd just like to see him play. But anyway, two more questions. Dealing with Alabama, with Quentin Williams getting a lot of respect and a lot of, I guess you could say, mentions for the Heisman, I heard something else, and I'm curious your guys' thoughts on it. If Quentin Williams makes it into that ceremony, say as a 4 or 5 or wherever that he sits or however many get to go, do you think that his being there, I guess you could say, affects Alabama's voting if Tua is there as well? I said in like a negative way, like to where maybe Kyler could squeak away with it, with him being there.
Yeah, I mean, voting has done a lot of there's a lot of regional bias in Heisman voting. So, yeah, Quentin Williams would – And likelihood take votes away from Tua Tagovailoa. Would it be enough for Kyler Murray to win? I don't think so.
Yeah, but
he would take votes away from him, no doubt.
But correct me if I'm wrong, guys, and you both have been Heisman voters before. I have not. But you write down 3 names, right?
Yes.
You send in 3 names, and you rank them 1, 2, and 3, mm-hmm, right?
Correct.
So you get points. So I can vote. If I was a Heisman voter, I could put Tua 1 and Quentin Williams 2, right?
Correct.
All right. So you're not necessarily losing a Tua vote at that point.
Yeah, and Scoops, I don't know if Quentin's got enough momentum right now to end up being a finalist. I know there's some people out there talking about him, and if you've actually watched a ton of Alabama football, you know how valuable he is. But I don't know if this is the Ndamukong Suh that we saw back in 2009 as far as getting that kind of push.
Yeah, the only way, to your point, it hurts Tua is if you leave him off a ballot for Quentin Williams or put Quentin Williams in front of Tua Tagovailoa.
Right, then that may take a few points away, but... And I don't know if they've always done the Heisman voting like that. It's just been since I've been in this business.
I think they have,
that's the way they've done it. But back in the day, when I was a little kid, you used to hear about regional voting, splitting votes, and it was going to hurt somebody allowing someone else to win. And I just don't hear as much about it now as I used to.
I don't really see a path to Tua not winning this award, even if he wasn't to play over the next couple of weeks. I know that sounds crazy, but I think based on the fact that Baker won it last year in Lincoln Riley's system, I think that hurts Kyler a little bit. Kyler will definitely be a finalist. More than likely will end up number 2, but I don't see any path to victory for Kyler Murray.
All right. Well, like I said, that was an interesting topic, and I appreciate you guys' insight on it. And then my last question, going into Alabama's game, I know you got to respect the opponent, as Saban says, so I get all that. But you assume maybe 2 to 3 series for Tua, and then Mac Jones comes in. My question dealing with the offense is, do you think this is a situation where maybe Nick Saban lets Mac Jones air it out any, or do you think this is like strictly – working on Alabama's ground and pound game, jet sweep, screens, and that's kind of where I'm at. Where do you think their offense goes in this game?
Actually, I think you got I think it's a great spot for Mac Jones. You're potentially getting him ready to be the backup for the Iron Bowl in this game. You're getting him some good looks because there's a chance when the Iron Bowl rolls around that he was the backup against LSU. He was the backup last week.
Right.
He's the backup this week, probably. There's a chance in the Iron Bowl he'll be the backup, so you may as well get him some confidence.
I agree. I don't think Jalen Hurts is close to playing right now.
Doesn't look like it.
And I think if you're Mac Jones, you can build a ton of confidence against Citadel. I think you go through your entire playbook, and I think he'll play 2 to 3 really quality quarters.
Yeah, and with some of the ones. He'll play with the ones in this game this weekend. You'll see Mac Jones out there, much like you saw Jalen playing with the ones at points during the course of the season. All right, I wanted to ask you guys about SEC scheduling. And to me, you know, I don't have to do the nuances of scheduling, so it's easy for me to sit in my ivory tower and say, let's make this different.
This is probably harder than it sounds, right?
Yeah, it has to be harder than it sounds. My naive doe, just new fawn born in the woods plan would be you grandfather in the ACC-SEC rivalry games at the end.
Okay.
All right.
Florida State, Clemson, South Carolina, Kentucky, Louisville, yeah. All those. Okay.
Georgia
Tech,
in.
Right?
In the month of November, no buys and only conference games. You don't even have to go to nine. You don't even have to go to nine conference games, though I wish you would. Just make it from the calendar month of November, the last 4 weeks of the
season.
That's
your mandate, that it's got to be all conference games except for those.
And we've grandfathered those in. Everything else, you know, the schedule comes from the league. So, you know, you dictate where the games are contractually.
So this primarily affects the West.
Right, because the East is eaten up with
I mean, it's basically
rivalry games.
Yeah, Tennessee, Vandy, and Missouri are all that's left out of the East, I guess.
And I don't know if we'll get as much national outcry this year as we have in the past, but what I've noticed is that Alabama fans, and to some degree Auburn fans and other SEC, but specifically Alabama fans, they don't care. They don't care that they're playing the Citadel this weekend.
They don't. I agree.
Yep. Because they're winning championships, and you know, the SEC is turning out national champions a lot. Usually it's Alabama. Sometimes it's been Auburn and LSU and Florida. But so I guess there's not a problem here. But from a consumer, I don't like these games at this point of the year. I swallow this a lot better in September than I do in November.
Now, I agree with you. I mean, when we've got to get excited about Missouri, Tennessee, or Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, it's kind of a sad day in the SEC. So, yeah, you're right. If your team ultimately is going to go 11-1 and win a SEC championship, it's not going to matter in the grand scheme of things as far as strength schedule. But as a consumer, when all of this comes together, if you could space this out somehow, it would be easier to stomach.
It works mathematically, Dunaway, because you've got an even amount of teams that do not play a game against the ACC. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean, it's going to primarily affect the West, but, you know, you've got Missouri, Tennessee, Vandy out of the East that don't play a game against an ACC team. So the math is going to work with the 10 teams there. So you got 5 versus 5 in this setup you're trying to work.
Yeah, well, no, that's just the final day.
I know,
and everyone's playing SEC games on the final day except for those rivalry games. You're basically moving a non-league weekend for some of these teams into September or October.
But you would agree everybody needs to play this coming week. You don't think there should be any buys, right?
No, and that is a mandate from the SEC.
It is, but you like that.
That is why this game is now here. In the past, Alabama and Auburn would take bye weeks.
Right.
Before the Iron Bowl, much like they use now before LSU and other, you know, important games throughout the season.
But like next year, we got two byes. You don't think anybody should be able to take a bye here?
No. I think once you get to November, it should be all conference games, except for the ones we grandfather in. Now, that's just me. That's for entertainment purposes, me wanting to sit on the couch or go to the stadium. What I've learned this week, when I put that out earlier on Twitter back on Monday or Tuesday, what I've learned this week is that a lot of fans use this weekend to do things they don't usually do, like take their littlest of kids to a game. Sometimes they go to the games without the little kids. Or for a lot of fans, maybe it's the only game they can go to because it's the only game they can get tickets to, or they get better tickets to these. Some people wrote me and said, this is the one game I get to go sit in the zone.
Okay, well, that's
seating.
That's the only angle I get on this, because, and I say this all the time, we only get so many college football Saturdays, and I just hate when we get an overload of these garbage games.
Now, on the other side of this, because I'm crazy enough where I can argue with myself.
The get-in is $30.
Yeah.
So that's as cheap as you're ever going to get an Alabama football ticket.
And the first one I took my son to was the 10-horn game against Georgia Southern.
Right.
So I took advantage of this very thing myself because I knew he'd want to leave at halftime, and I knew it wouldn't be an important game. Ended up, by the way, was a competitive game at halftime. I didn't want to leave.
It was an entertaining game.
Yeah.
The Auburn get-in, Jim, is...
Sit there and eat your hot dog, son. We got to stay.
The Auburn get-in is $12. So $30... These are ATIX prices, by the way. $30 for Alabama, $12 for Auburn. You're never going to get in one of those two stadiums that cheap. I mean, pretty rarely are you. I should say never.
But that price would be there in September, right?
I don't know.
I'd have to go look at what the Auburn-Alabama state price was. I don't think that one was too high, but 12 is pretty low.
But you notice what else has happened this weekend in week 12? There's not a lot of games anywhere in the country
that's what I'm saying.
That are great.
You got some, you know, Syracuse, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
But I don't know when we put that one on the schedule, we thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's anyone else's fault when you look at the other conferences. It just happens to be bad conference matchups.
Right. And when the schedule is made, you think there's a chance Miami of Florida and Virginia Tech in Blacksburg is going to mean something, right? USC, UCLA in a rivalry game is going to mean something.
Yeah. To your point, the more important game, Lance, in that conference this week is Arizona at Washington State. That's the most important Pac-12 game, right? Probably.
Yeah, I mean, BC, Florida State could have meant something.
Yeah, you thought it was. Yeah, I mean, it could have.
Yeah.
It could have at some point. I know what you're saying.
But you've got West Virginia, Oklahoma State. That's a good game that is going to affect the Big 12 if it goes the wrong way. I mean, a big impact on the Big 12.
Yeah, so I don't know. I like the fact that there's so many. I'll be looking at attendance on Saturday to see what it looks like around these SEC stadiums. Because attendance has been a issue at times. From what I've gotten on Twitter, it doesn't look like it's going to be a huge deal in Tuscaloosa. I'm sure there'll be big gaps in the student section.
There will be. And I don't know what you'd put the over-under on an Auburn-Liberty crowd. Lance, you're good at over-unders.
I would put that one at 72,000. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's a great crowd.
That's probably an over-under there. Yeah.
It's a great crowd.
I think I'd hedge under.
So, need for a change or no?
Well, I mean, you're right. It's not just the SEC. I look at it like you. I just want a good TV product. You know, this 11 o'clock slate, it's hard to find anything worth watching in the 11 o'clock slate.
They spread out three SEC games. I'm an SEC football fan. I always keep one on.
At least you got one in each window.
You got one in each window. They did that. They give me Arkansas, Mississippi State. They give me Missouri, Tennessee, and Ole Miss and Vandy. And we have a bonus of having UAB and Texas A&M.
UAB
really, really good, and that's so good that it's in prime time on ESPN2, a great platform.
Of course, when that game was scheduled, nobody thought UAB would be this.
Right. So, I don't know. We'll see if down the road something happens. I think if you throw a ninth game in there at some point, maybe this is the weekend that's impacted the most.
Could be. I mean, and I'm for that.
And I would be for
it. I'm with you, too. If all we get is conference play after the start of November, I'm good with that.
But, of course, I never need a win over Rice to get bowl eligible, or a win over, you know, Middle Tennessee or Liberty or UMass to get bowl eligible, over Chattanooga. And for some people around the country, they say that's why these games are here, to make sure some of these coaches are staying bowl eligible.
Well, Vandy's got to win this week to be bowl eligible. That's a conference game. Tennessee's got, you know, that would help them to win. That's a conference game.
So, exactly.
You know,
Arkansas's got no chance. That's a conference game. Forrest in Tuscaloosa is next. Hey, Forrest, how are you?
How's it going, guys?
Awesome, buddy. You good?
I'm good. Good. Well, I just wanted to talk about, and I know a lot of fans don't agree with this, and I don't know why I've always felt this way. Maybe it just makes me a bad fan to feel this way. But
boo! We hate you, Forrest. Go ahead.
I don't necessarily hate these games.
Okay.
And I try to put myself in the shoes of some as a coach in the situation. And what I mean by that is I'm putting trophies in cases, rings on fingers. I'm playing in the hardest conference in the country and arguably the hardest division of that conference. Why do I need to make my schedule any harder? I just played LSU, Mississippi State, about to play Auburn, and then Georgia. I really don't care what anybody thinks if they think that I need to play a harder schedule. Well, my ratings are still great. People are still watching. Like the end product at the end of the year is still exactly what people want. Why do I want to make my schedule harder, more injury, potential more losses? Like it's a lose-lose situation in my book. And that's kind of really all I have.
Yeah, so. Thank you, Forrest. Trust me, from Alabama's perspective, or Auburn's for that matter, or these other SEC teams, it is the smart play. There's no doubt about it. It's the smart play. I mean, you look at, just take Alabama's schedule, Mississippi or LSU, Mississippi State. Give me an SEC game you could throw in here. Throw somebody in. Right. Alabama, Mississippi State, South Carolina. Just throw South Carolina.
Well, who's the other East team that Alabama played this year other than Tennessee?
Missouri.
It would be Missouri.
Okay. Take Missouri right here.
Yeah. It would be a challenging.
Or if you had nine games, it would be a third East team. That's why I use South Carolina.
A third East team.
Yeah. Throw South Carolina in. I mean, that's a lot to ask.
Yep.
And this is where the rubber meets the end. So let me just say, for Auburn, if Georgia, throw Texas A&M, Georgia, throw South Carolina in here. I mean, that's tough.
To the people that complain about it nationally, that says it's an advantage for the SEC to throw this in here at this point.
I think they're right.
They're right about it.
Yeah, I mean, they're right. I mean, that's okay.
But think about it. These other contenders, I mean, look how tough Clemson has it. They've got to play Duke this weekend.
Duke's better than the Citadel and Liberty.
Yep.
But no, these people are right. The SEC is taking advantage of it. I don't blame them.
Yeah, you say that, Dunaway, but a team like West Virginia does have to go to Stillwater to take on Oklahoma State.
There are some that are really tough. I was joking about.
I mean, Ohio State.
Duke actually has a chance to shock the world. They're not a bad football team.
I know there's no conference affiliation, but again, Notre Dame, based on the ACC schedule, they got to take on Syracuse.
No, there's no doubt it's an advantage. It's a smart play by the SEC, but it's certainly an advantage. I don't think you can argue otherwise. But this is where the rubber meets the road, though, on the fans that say, I'm tired of these neutral site games and the bad home schedule at a conference. I think they would also tell you, I like having this game right here so that my team can rest up, in Alabama's case, after a physical LSU-Mississippi State run before the Iron Bowl. In Auburn's case, after Texas A&M-Georgia before the Iron Bowl. I like having the opportunity to rest up.
But only if you're playing for a championship. If you're Dan Mullen in Florida and you're building for something for the next couple of years, do you really want to be playing Idaho? Would you rather not play a challenging game that maybe you lose, but at the same time, you get some entertainment value out of it.
Well, I think if these coaches were being honest with you, Lance, it's a free win for Dan Mullen. You know? I mean, this could be the difference in Dan Mullen finishing with 8 wins and 9 wins.
Danny agrees with most of you. Danny from Gardendale. Mr. November, Jimmy, I'm bored. Wants LSU, Mississippi State, Florida, Auburn, then go right to the SEC championship game. Give me a break. No, give the players a break. Let them rest, heal before the Iron Bowl.
That's the thought behind this. And again, as we've said, if you're not going to be punished for it by the committee,
but look at
why would you ever change?
Clemson with Duke. I mean, Michigan's got to play Indiana this weekend, Brown.
Be a good basketball game.
Oklahoma is being challenged this weekend with a conference game against Kansas.
See, I think that's what, like the Big 12, I think that's, if you look at who Kansas has to finish their season with, have you ever looked at their schedule?
Ohio State's got to play Maryland, Brown. Tongue firmly in cheek.
Well, Maryland's only a 2-touchdown underdog in that one, Jim.
Yeah.
But you look at Kansas, they finish their schedule now with Oklahoma and Texas. Don't think that's by accident that the Big 12 has them playing Kansas the last 2 weeks.
I've been wanting to get this stat out, and I know you got a sponsorship to give us, Brown, but I've been wanting to get this stat out.
We got time for a stat, Jim.
All week long. But Northwestern, you know, they didn't win an out-of-conference game, but what is amazing is their running back, Isaiah Bowser. To show you how different a team is from beginning to end, his first 6 games this year, he had 2 yards in six
games.
Like
total 2 yards.
2 total yards in 6 games. The last 4 games, he's got 483 yards, 165 in the win this past week over Iowa in 31 carries. All of a sudden, he becomes a big part of their offense, and he's delivered 2 yards in the first six games.
Well, you go back and you look at what they want to do. I mean, they play really tight defense, and Fitzgerald wants to run the football. Clayton Thorson's a versatile quarterback, but Joshua Jackson, one of the best running backs over the last few years, and then Larkin gets hurt, ends his career after a couple of games. And this has been the difference for Northwestern. Really dangerous game this week, though, at Minnesota.
Yeah, but they're already in the Big Ten championship game. Pitt's 1 win away from being in the ACC championship game. And Utah can lock up the South as well.
Bunch of messy conferences.
Woo. And if you had 18 points to move around in the Georgia-Kentucky game, we could have had Kentucky and Atlanta. You could have had a Northwestern, Pitt, Kentucky, Utah year of 4 of the 5 power conferences.
Well, that'd be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and Iowa State with a shot at the other one. The other Power 5. Wow. Mike on a cell phone is next with us. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Thank you, Mike.
Hey, I want to start off, you guys, in my absolute favorite show. I'm glad you guys got this time slot.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
I'm glad you get to listen to us in this time slot, man.
Oh, yes. I want to kind of say something about the schedule you guys were talking about earlier.
All right.
I know everyone wants to say that think they got the fix for everything, but maybe there's something I'm just overlooking. I was thinking of possibly maybe fixing it for not just the SEC, but every team out there, because every team has multiple cupcake teams that they play every year. So how about not only fixing the schedule, but the playoffs too, making it to an 8-team playoff, but taking away one game for every team. That way you also have not too many games to have to play, but you also get rid of the cupcake team that they play every year as well.
So you want to go back to an 11-game overall schedule is what you're saying?
Yes.
Could we keep it at 12 and add a bye week?
Well, we do that next year.
Yeah, next year they're adding a bye week. That's going to help. But you're concerned about player safety, and, Mike, I think it's a great thing you have to take in consideration when you're talking about expanding, because you're talking about an extra game, and the people who are talking about these cupcake games this weekend for the SEC are throwing at me, player safety, and that is a great concern.
Okay, but remember, the NFL teams are playing up to 24 games a year.
They're also making millions of dollars.
I get that.
Know? Yeah, I will tell you, Mike, and he just dropped off, but he brings this up on a day where Mike Oresko, who is the commissioner for the AAC, says he's now considering lobbying, being the forefront to lobby for the expansion of the playoffs to go to 8 teams away from 4. He wants. He has never really thought about it, but seeing the way UCF and his league is being treated in this, he is thinking of now jumping out and being the face of pushing for the expansion.
Yeah, and they're going to compare scores, Brown. I know you don't like doing that, and I think it's dangerous to do. I agree with that. But they go back to Central Florida and what Central Florida was able to do against Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh more than likely is going to be playing for the ACC championship. And just imagine if Pittsburgh somehow shocked Clemson. They're not going to, but if they did, and then you've got a team that won by 27 over Pittsburgh earlier this year, and then you look at Houston, a team that dominated Arizona. Arizona still got a shot playing the Pac-12 South.
And his point, though, is he thinks the Group of Five should have access to an 8-team playoff, and I don't know if we're ever going to get to that, but as a Group of Five commissioner, he obviously would want that access.
And that's what I was going to say. He's on the wrong side to be the face of this. And that's I know fans don't want to hear that, but that's true. You need somebody on the other side to be the face of it.
Right.
For it to happen.
Exactly.
The Power Five Conference is going to say, oh, yeah, you want an 8-game playoff.
Four Downs Every Day brought to you by our friends at Vulcan Tires.
First down.
Which 4-5 bird-themed team has the best chance of getting to the postseason? Seahawks, Falcons, Eagles, or Ravens? Think about all four of them. 4-5 right now.
I would go Eagles because of that division. I don't think that's a tremendous division there, and the Eagles, as bad as they have looked, can still win that division at 4-5. Washington leads at 6-3.
I'm going to say Eagles, too, for the same reasons. But I'm still not giving up on the Falcons.
Yeah, I'm going to go Eagles, too, just based on, Carson Wentz hasn't played like an elite quarterback. He's come on a little bit. But I've got a feeling the Eagles are still the best in that division.
Can I say you have picked a weird hill to die on with this Falcons team?
You guys are all about it. They're done. I mean, done.
They are. They're 4-5.
I just want to bring back week 2 audio.
Well, it ain't going
to
happen.
And you know who the Falcons have got next week? They got to go to New Orleans on Thursday night.
Good luck.
I mean, to prepare, they were done at week 2.
Yeah.
New Orleans dress rehearsal.
New Orleans is so unbeatable.
They're 8-1.
Second down.
Which current first place team do you have the least amount of confidence in? The 6-3 Skins or the 6-3 Bears?
Well, I think my previous answer tells you it's the 6-3 Skins.
Yeah, that team's leaking oil a little bit.
The Redskins, yeah.
Yeah, but their defense is really strong, riddled with a bunch of Alabama players. The Bears, though, I'm going to go Bears. I don't really have faith in either one of them, to be honest. I don't think either one of them make the playoffs.
You know, I'm surprised where the Bears are. I thought they'd be one of the surprise teams this year, but I thought more 8-8, 9-7, and we'll see how they end up. But sitting at 6-3, Matt Nagy's done a really good job with Mitchell Trubisky. I hate the flex schedule, though. I understand the flex schedule, but now my Rams play 3 of the next 4 weeks in primetime now that they flex this Bears Rams game.
That's tough for you, Lance. Sorry, man. Really sorry to hear that.
Tough
buddy.
Being the team everyone wants to see.
God, that's terrible, Lance.
It's a wake-up call.
Let's start a GoFundMe for Lance.
Yeah, those games last till 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
More disappointing this year, the 3-6 Jaguars or the 1-8 Raiders?
Oh, it got to be the Jags. I mean, that was a team that was in the AFC Championship game last year, and people didn't think they were going anywhere, and they bought into Blake Bortles.
Poor man Tom Brady's way he looked in the playoffs last year.
Absolutely.
Well, you say that. Look, and I get it, but Jacksonville still has an outside shot. I don't think they will, but Oakland's paying a guy $10 million to become their head coach, and they've still got what was viewed, at least going into this season, as a potential franchise quarterback.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody thought they were going to be better than the Chargers and Chiefs in that division.
But they're 1-8. Well, I mean, they're awful. They're the worst team in the NFL.
They are.
They are. But sometimes that's intentional at some point. And I really think the Jaguars, they're missing a window with that defense, I think.
Fourth down.
More dangerous off-the-radar team right now. Would you go with the Chargers and the AFC?
I think I'd go Chargers. It's easy not to pay attention to them because of the Chiefs in that division, but that's an awful good football team.
And Eckler's been really good, but they get Melvin Gordon back here at some point.
They're about to get Bosa back.
Yeah, Bosa's coming back this weekend. And, when you look at the schedule, they've got some easy games coming up. they're able to run it a little bit, beat Kansas City in that revenge game, they could still get the number one seed in the AFC, which is kind of crazy.
I think Chargers is your answer there. I'm not sure Cousins has been the perfect fit in Minnesota yet. That's Four Downs, brought to you by Vulcan Tire.
You are not late for work. This is an earlier than normal viewing menu presented by You Break I Fix. Phone restores now. You Break I Fix.
You guys, Charles Bronson friends?
Not particularly.
Used to
no.
Used to be back in the day, yeah.
Well, 7 p.m. on Epix is a little bit of a marathon. We got Death Wish, followed by Death Wish 2.
I see a trend.
Followed by Death Wish 3. And after that, they're doing Death Wish 4.
Wow.
He's got a lot of Death Wishes.
He does. I liked him more in the Hard Times roles.
He's a beat-up dude. And then 7 p.m. on Lifetime, an interesting one for me. I'm excited about this one. 12 Men of Christmas. After losing her job and breaking up with her fiancé, a PR exec escapes to a small town where she puts her media know-how to good use, raising money for the local rescue squad. But her racy idea of selling a sexy calendar featuring squad members is met with a little bit of criticism.
You know who doesn't like it?
Who?
Santa Claus.
Oh, because it's Christmas.
Yeah. Does she have to audition all 12 months?
You have to.
That's the viewing menu from Rockstar tonight. All right, so I'm flipping through Saturday Down South, and I really think Alabama is going to be better next year because of how young this team is. And as Paul points out, skill players on the other side. If you got Tua back, those receivers, the running back depth, a lot of the offensive line, you're going to be really good. Irv Smith, though, I didn't realize he can declare if he wants to, and his stock is unbelievable high at this point.
I've seen him in a lot of first-round mocks. Yeah, I think he could be a first-round tight end, easy.
Saturday Down South put him at a second round.
Yeah, but the way the NFL is going, he fits that mold, that athletic receiver-like tight end.
Trevon Diggs, who is hurt, but he's a second-round projection right now, likely would come back and play because he could be a first-round guy.
I mean, he could play his way into the top 15 with a good year.
Mac Wilson could declare. Second-round grade right now, according to Saturday Down South.
Yeah.
Maybe come back, play himself.
That'd be a win if you get Mac Wilson back.
Yeah. Jonah Williams, first round. Raekwon, first round.
Those guys, no chance.
Yeah, I don't even think they think twice.
First round.
No chance.
Krennan Williams has played his way maybe number one overall.
Well, I've seen all four of those guys you just mentioned are top 15 right now.
Yeah. Nick writes in, interesting scenario. I kind of know where you're headed with all the juniors who can declare. It's a lot. However, do you think if we Alabama, says Nick, win the national championship again, will it make some of those guys want to come back for a chance to be the first team ever to three-peat?
Well, you know, I mean, not a lot of people thought Damian Harris would return, and he did, but now he's got a light load on those legs. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe some of them do. Boy, it's just hard to say no to first-round money with, you know, injury in the back of your mind and things like that. Some do. I've never begrudged a guy for leaving for first-round money. So that's why you play the game, man. But, you know, some of those may choose to come back. Especially those guys, Jim, that may not look like they're in the first round. Why not play another year and try to play your way into the first round?
Jarrett Stidham's an interesting decision he's going to have to make. Yesterday, Gus Malzahn says that they will talk about it after the Iron Bowl on Stidham's future. And he has options. He's got his degree, so he could play one more year outside of Auburn, come back to Auburn, or go to the NFL.
It looks like coming back to Auburn is the least likely of those scenarios, though.
They also have at Auburn Derrick Brown and Nick Coe and Jamel Dean as guys option who are playmakers that could leave early. And I wanted to ask you about this guy because we know how the shelf life of running backs are so quick. But Benny Snell at Kentucky. Has the shine worn off of Benny Snell very quickly here as the calendar flipped to November? Because he has disappeared in a couple of big games here. Not horrible games, but he hasn't taken them over like he has.
Less than 100 yards rushing, which
is...
Yeah. I don't know what the expectation is when you can't do anything else offensively. I mean, when, you know, defense coordinators are just going to tee off and key on Benny Snell when you know Terry Wilson can't beat you.
No worries.
Well, I mean, there are worries because the production has really tailed off. I mean, since 169 yards back a month ago against Vanderbilt, 67 yards against Missouri, 73 against Georgia, 81 against Tennessee. Those aren't awful numbers.
No. But he, Benny Snell, actually you know, sort of called out his teammates for their effort the last couple of games, especially the Tennessee game this past week where they lost. If you're Benny Snell, do you ride when you can ride?
You mean like get out of town and go to the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, stock's pretty high
right now. I think if you're being realistic, if you're Benny Snell, I mean, if in your honest moments, don't you think this is about the best year we're going to have at Kentucky?
Yeah, and I still think Benny Snell's got an opportunity to get 1,500 yards. He's right at 1,100 now. He's still got Louisville coming up.
Yeah, he can run wild against
them. Yeah, I mean, seriously. I mean, look at what, you know, teams have done against Louisville on the ground.
Right.
So, you know, you've still got a bowl game. So you've got opportunity to get about 1,500 yards. And, looking at the running backs coming out, I mean, he would be one of the top three guys.
I mean, if I'm Benny Snell, I say, look, I played at Kentucky. We had a magical September and October. We were one of the biggest stories in the nation until Georgia whipped us.
At one point, he was in the conversation for making it to New York, maybe on the Heisman.
Is it going to get better than that in Lexington?
Yeah, probably not. Interesting as you start to think of the end of the year and the juniors who can jump to the National Football League. We overplay these end of the year things a lot. Oxford Dictionaries. Gives each year they give a word that describes the year. The word this year is toxic, right? Which of course we can turn into a great sports topic. Which franchise was toxic in 2018?
That's for the poor hosts that are having to do a live show on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, or New Year's Day. After Thanksgiving.
That is the Raiders, by the way.
Toxic. You got the answer already.
Eight toxics, your word of the year in 2018. Try not to have a toxic Thursday as you drive in. Every day is a great day to go by and see our friends at Dreamland Barbecue. Ain't nothing like them nowhere. They bring us the poll question every day, too. Now, I watch one episode a day now of Deadwood because LT told me to watch it. So I'm watching that. And LT's poll question today is off the beaten path HBO series.
We call them second tier, the second tier original
second
series.
Second tier. Yeah. Not your elite, not The Wire and some of those. But Deadwood, Oz, or Rome, which was the better series? Deadwood, Oz, or Rome?
Deadwood out to an early lead.
I loved all three.
And you loved all three. So you can go vote right now at Jock's Roundtable. Jeff and Aniston next with us on the phones. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. Deadwood, a second tier?
Well, I mean, it's not on the level of, we're going to get blowback on this. I'll go ahead and predict.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Man. Look, I mean, it's a cult classic, Jeff, but it only lasted four seasons.
But we're saying it's not Sopranos, The Wire, or Game of Thrones, basically, is what we're saying, right?
Yeah. Or Curb.
For those years it was on, I don't know. It's one of my faves. But I'm partial to Westerns, so. I would have called in a couple days ago, but somebody hacked my phone account in North Carolina.
Are you serious?
No way. How did that happen?
I don't know. Went to a Walmart. I didn't know Walmart had authority to, you know, change people's accounts and stuff, preparing to sell. He went in, bought two $1,200 phones and changed my number and my mom's number to them phones.
You know, I had somebody randomly add a phone to my account. I don't know if it was AT&T's error or if somebody figured out a way to do it, but one time there was an extra phone number on my account that I called.
I need to go check that out.
I know.
That burns you up. And yep. Pain. Would it surprise y'all if I were to tell y'all that Andrew Luck is second in NFL with touchdown passes?
Right now?
Yes.
Well, it would have surprised me, but Mike Keith was with us yesterday on his weekly visit and said he's on pace, I think, to throw 48, and I did not realize he'd thrown that many touchdown passes.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's not getting the credit he deserves right now, and this is not a bad Colts team.
He's just behind Mahomes, which is like 5 ahead, 31-26.
But you know, Jeff, in that same interview, we talked about the fact he hasn't been sacked in four games, and these elite or borderline elite NFL quarterbacks, you give them time to throw. I mean, they're going to kill you.
How much better they are when they're not getting around.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Man, I did not know that. Now, I'm not dialed in. I watch a lot of college football replays on Sunday, early on. So I've not watched a lot of Colts this year. Andrew Luck's ahead of Jared Goff and Drew Brees. That's amazing.
Yes, and he's only the third quarterback in NFL history to have six straight games with three touchdowns or more.
We may figure out Frank Reich's pretty good football coach.
Yeah.
Can any of y'all name a Colt receiver?
No.
T.Y. Hilton.
Outside of T.Y. Hilton. Jack Doyle.
Dallas Clark.
No, Jack Doyle. No, Jack Doyle's the new Dallas Clark. Okay. That's their tight end, yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He is.
What has happened to Virginia Tech, Miami? In the last 5 weeks, They're toxic. They're combined. Toxic.
Hey, this is this is the third time that Mark Richt has lost four straight since he's been back at Miami, which is kind of crazy when you think about that.
And they're only scoring 17.5 points their last five games. I thought that was his gig. Well, isn't he an offensive-minded coach?
He is.
Yeah, loser of this game may not go to a bowl game.
And Virginia Tech's defense has given up 45 or more points in three of the last five games. What happened to Bud Foster all of a sudden?
Yeah, he's lost it.
Yeah, 5-5 versus 4-5 in that game this weekend.
It's a terrible conference. Brown, the other day I heard you saying that if you were Bama, or Saban, you'd tell the running backs, get ready to run.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't this be a good game to get Mac Jones some experience actually throwing the ball around?
I mentioned that earlier. We had a caller ask if we thought Mac Jones would just hand it off. I think you've got to get Mac Jones prepared to be the backup. I mean, when you watch Jalen Hurts, he still looks like he's a little bit away from playing, and Mac Jones is probably going to be your legitimate backup in the Iron Bowl. And I'm not suggesting you'll need him, but in the event you do, you'd like him to be ready. So this is a great time to let him run the offense and get some confidence. And like Jim said early, get him in with the ones. You know, let him run with the ones.
Definitely. And last one, USC, I'm going to pick on your team a little bit, but how can USC be in this shape? I mean, they had 25,000 fans, it looked like, at most to me at their game the other day, and they claimed 56. There's no way.
No way.
And they're just a shadow of their team, and they got so much talent just right around there. And I saw the other day, I looked it up, they were in the ESPN's deal, 23rd in recruiting right now behind Ole Miss, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Arkansas. What? How can they? I like Clay Helton as much as anybody.
No, he's yeah, Jeff, he's a nice guy, and he thinks he's on solid footing after a meeting with Lynn Swann. I don't think he is, because I think what's going to happen, there's a good chance they lose Victory Bell this weekend to UCLA in the Rose Bowl.
And then lose to Notre Dame.
And then they lose to Notre Dame, and they're sitting at 5-7. And you can make excuses about offensive and defensive lines right now, but you've still got skill guys, and you were shut out in the second half against Cal this past weekend, a team that you had beaten 15 consecutive times. And for USC, on a down year, they should be 9-3, worst case, in the Pac-12 right now.
And let me add to what Lance is saying, Jeff. And I've heard some Auburn fans say this out of frustration about keeping Malzahn another year, because Auburn fans feel like they would be this if their job opened up. If USC opens up, you're easily the best job open. And it's not even close.
Oh,
yeah. It's a top five job in the country.
Well,
excuse for the line.
Yeah, I think there's 70 coaches that would take that job right now.
So you're easily the best job.
I think more than that, Lance. Yeah. I think it'd be more than that. That's a primo job. I mean,
That is the most overused phrase in sports.
What, top five job?
Top five job. Well,
but even if it's not, those top five jobs aren't going to be open, Jim. Yeah. I mean, it's easily the best open.
But you will give me this. It is the best job in the Pac-12, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it may be a top five job, but I'm just saying we have a lot of schools that would be a top five job. Okay, real quickly, the story I was going to tell you about
Alabama.
Alabama, 24-game home win streak. They'll break it likely this weekend to 25. Last time they won 24 straight, 1971 through 1974. You know who ended the streak?
74.
It would have been 1975, the opener in 1975.
Oh, was that Mizzou?
It was Missouri, one of the bigger upsets under Bear Bryant. They were a 3-touchdown favorite. Lost 20-7, scored a late nothing touchdown in the fourth quarter. More importantly about that game, national television, ABC, I wonder if Bear complained the next week in his news conference about the attendance. 72,000 is what Legion Field held back then, 63,000 in attendance for that opener. They got fat and happy on winning, think they needed to show up.
Students quit showing up, man. Yep. That's what happens.
Remember earlier in the week when I said easiest money on the board, Missouri against Tennessee?
Are you changing?
Easier money on the board this week, UCF against Cincinnati.
Oh, wow. Hey, don't forget
agree or disagree?
I mean, it does seem kind of easy right now. But
okay.
I'm willing to go stake and give you money. I mean, not money. I end up giving you money when I lose the stake. Give you points. Think about it. With the commitment now from the Auburn athletic director and the school president, for Auburn fans, for your comfort level going into 2019, is it Hugh Freeze as offensive coordinator or bust for you at this point? So let's talk about that coming up after we talk to Wim.
Because one of our coworkers that's maybe the biggest Auburn fan we all know. Guy that's got a had an unbelievable streak of consecutive Auburn games that Gus Malzahn finally buried. Said, ah, that wasn't fair. I think his kids had something. But anyway, he said it just a few minutes ago. He was visiting us here in the studio and said, we asked him where he stood, and he said it's complicated. And we asked him who he wanted at quarterback, and he said, whoever it is, I want him under Hugh Freeze. He preferably Bo Nix under Hugh Freeze. So I think a lot of Auburn fans out there are like that. I'd be interested in hearing the feedback if it's Hugh Freeze or bust for them now.
We'll do that coming up after Wimp. Right now, if I said SEC Coach of the Year vote, now I did my Football Writers Association vote this week, and I nationally I gave it to Bill Clark. That was my vote from UAB.
Do you do just one, or do
I put in three?
Right. Are you comfortable saying who else you voted on?
Mike Leach was my third choice. I'm trying to remember who my second choice was at this point.
Dana Holgorsen?
It was not Dana Holgorsen. I'll think of that. But in the SEC, just for the conference.
Isn't it funny? Dabo and Nick Saban don't even get – they're dominant.
No, I would go Nick Saban right now in the SEC. Yeah.
I thought about both of them. You'd go Nick Saban.
I would.
I think
never,
I would,
never
too. This
gets,
is the,
never gets considered.
No, this is the year to do it, though,
yep.
I think.
I think it is. You know, it would have been Mark Stoops, but they've dropped off, obviously, with back-to-back losses. Outside of that, I don't know another direction you would actually go. Orgeron for a minute.
Mullen, if he could have finished, but he didn't.
Yeah, I would go Nick Saban.
Yeah, I'm with Lance on this one. I think this is the year you go Nick Saban. He gets ignored every year. This is the year he's A, earned it. There's no doubt he's earned it. And B, who else are you going to give it to?
I went Campbell. It was
Matt Campbell?
Yeah, it was Clark, Campbell, and Leach were my three.
I'm all right with that.
No, I think all three really good.
Yeah.
Good job.
Almost put Herm Edwards in there.
Wouldn't have a problem with that either.
Yeah, I mean, he's got them going into the last 2 weeks. They're still alive in championship game out of the South there in the Pac-12.
So who'd you go with the SEC Coach of the Year?
I'd go Nick Saban. I think it's the year to do Saban, yeah.
So this is the year to do it. All those others were not.
Well,
I know. I mean, but you're right. The guys who usually are the best don't get it. Mark Stoops, you think he still gets a little love?
Yeah, I think so.
So will Jeremy Pruitt. They win this weekend. Remember, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., and Joey Logano wrap up the NASCAR season at Homestead this Sunday. Winner take all for the NASCAR championship. Whoever finishes in the lead of those four guys, they're the champs. And as you heard Marty Smith earlier with us, you can hear it podcasted at jocksfm.com. He's going to ride with Kevin Harvick to finish the deal. SB Nation, Good Bull Hunting. They've got a... what do you call that? A Photoshop picture of Bill Clark?
That is. What's he doing?
In Game of Thrones style with a little dragon on his shoulder just blowing through the competition.
Oh, that's the Blazer Dragon?
That's the
pretty
Blazer
good. I like
dragon.
That. Yeah.
It's very well done there by the folks at SB Nation. Good job there by you. A little twist before we do our sneaky game spotlight. On the Missouri-Tennessee game this weekend, Derek Dooley coaches at Missouri, right?
He's the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, credit to Saturday Down South for pointing this out. Something's got to give for Derek Dooley. A rare win by Dooley at Neyland Stadium, or Tennessee with a win at Neyland Stadium with Dooley inside Neyland Stadium because he's on the Missouri staff. Something's got to give with Derek Dooley this weekend.
What would you grade him this year?
Okay.
Yeah, it's done all right.
Drew Locke has had some bad games, though.
Yeah. B-minus, C-plus.
But he's, you know,
he's go C-plus.
He's been without his stud receiver for some of those games, yeah. Lance. I mean, that's not on Dooley.
Without his stud tight end this week.
Yeah, he is. Albert O's out.
Maybe done for a while.
But that offense is fourth in the conference in scoring. That's pretty good.
Sneaky good game. Hit it, Rockstar.
It's the Farmhouse Victory Grill Spotlight.
College football sneaky good game.
All right, a game that's not one of the high-profile main TV games. Give me something to put on a different TV, Brownie.
Well, Pitt is a six-point favorite at Wake, and I am so sorry for giving you Pitt Wake, but it is that kind of week. It does have meaning for Pitt, though. 11 a.m., ACC Network. You'll probably get it locally here on either CW21 or My68. Check those out. Pitt wins this game. They win their division. That's all they got to do. All they got to do is win one more game this year. They win their division and get to get destroyed by Clemson in the ACC championship game. So there's meaning for Pitt. Pitt's favored by 6. Pitt at Wake, your sneaky good game.
Yeah, and I think it will be a sneaky good game. I think it's going to be a little more difficult than Pitt thinks.
Give me a good game.
I'm going to go garbage ACC as well. This could have been one of those premier games, at least going into the season. BC heading into Tallahassee to take on Florida State. Florida State is battling to win, to not lose more than 6 games for the first time since 1976. That was the last time that happened. Bobby Bowden's first season. I think they will fight a banged-up BC team coming off the big loss to Clemson. I think that game will go down to the wire. ESPN2, 2:30 Saturday in Tallahassee.
For me, I'm going, it's sneaky good because you got to find it. ESPN News, 11 o'clock, USF and Temple. Blake Barnett, questionable again with his shoulder, likely will not play, going to try to play. Temple is coming off high-profile point total games for them against UCF and Houston. I could see a little letdown for Temple to make this interesting. USF and Temple, points, 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 points.
Temple's 5-1 in that division. If Cincinnati can get a win, they could, in theory, they could be, I don't know how the tiebreaker would work, but if Cincinnati beats UCF and Temple wins, they're in a tie for the lead of that division. And they've beaten Cincinnati head-to-head, Temple has, it since he's only lost.
And that's our sneaky good game brought to you by our friends at Baumhauer. It seems like, Brown, you think a lot of Auburn fans are all in on Hugh Freeze next year at Auburn. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard a lot of that, that if Gus Malzahn is the coach of 2019, Hugh Freeze being the offensive coordinator will make me stomach that. I think Auburn fans, and I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I think they feel like, A, Gus Malzahn respects Hugh Freeze enough, he would hand play calling over to him, and B, a guy with Hugh Freeze's resume wouldn't take this job if he doesn't think he'll get full play calling capabilities because he's trying to climb the ladder back into a head coaching job. So he's not going to take some figurehead job and be a yes man to Gus Malzahn. He's only going to take it if he knows he can call plays.
You always get people say, but Hugh Freeze has a job with the Alliance.
Yeah.
He's coaching football in Phoenix with Phil Savage and Rick Neuheisel.
Well, all those things are true. First of all, the head coaches in that league, I think, are only making $500,000. I would imagine the coordinator is probably making a couple hundred thousand, maybe. So this would be, obviously, way more money. And you could take that job. If he's hired at Auburn, he'll be hired well before that season even starts, a month before that season starts. They don't start until the week after the Super Bowl. So if he were to take the Auburn job, they would have that in place before the second signing day.
Who makes that hire, though?
Who makes what hire? Freeze?
Yeah.
I mean, Gus has to obviously sell Leaf and Green on the fact that this is what I'm saying. When I say I could turn this around, this is how I turn it around.
A worst case for Gus is he gets fired and he gets his buyout. If he brings in Hugh Freeze and this thing gets fixed, Gus will never get credit.
No, he will not. You're right.
And I just don't think the ego is going to allow it. I don't think this thing ever happens.
Bobby's a big Auburn fan. Bringing in a Hugh Freeze next year is like putting a used Band-Aid on a stab wound. Terry and Jasper is next on the Auburn offense. Hey, Terry, how are you?
Just fine. How are you guys?
Awesome. Thank you, Terry.
Good deal. Yeah, I'll start off by saying I'm a lifelong Auburn fan. Attended my first game in 63. But I would be all for Hugh Freeze taking over as offensive coordinator. I am not a Malzahn fan. I don't understand why we gave the contract to a mediocre coach.
Because he beat, basically beat Georgia and Alabama in 3 weeks' time. I mean, I know you're laughing, but that's really it. If he had lost both those games, I don't think he'd be the Auburn coach today.
He wouldn't be, but you got to look at his body of work, and he's a 50-50 coach.
Yep, I agree, but Jimmy Sexton knew he could sell Auburn on the fact that Arkansas was a legitimate prospect. He knew that Gus Malzahn had just beaten Georgia and Alabama. He knew that Auburn had some upheaval at athletics director, and they didn't want to get on the coaching carousel. Jimmy Sexton held every card there, and he played every card, and Auburn let him play them.
He did that, and to me, the Auburn president should be dismissed for negotiating the contract that he negotiated with Malzahn.
Yeah.
I wouldn't care if they fired him today, but I think Hugh Freeze would be a great choice as the offensive coordinator. And I tell you another thing, I am not for Kelly Bryant coming to Auburn myself because I know he's a great prospect, but he quit on his team this year. You know, he got beat out for the job and he quit. So
you
want to bring a quitter in.
You sound like exactly one the lifelong Auburn fan who works with us up here who was just saying that word for word in our commercial break.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you bring in Bo Nix and then you bring in someone that has a passing attack that Bo Nix could bring, and then you bring in someone with Hugh Freeze that can develop a passing attack. The thing I am saying with Malzahn and his staff is they do not develop talent. They get Cam Newton, and he's a talent already there. So was Nick Marshall. But they have yet to recruit anyone and develop them as a player or in the skill position.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's, it's not 100% true, but there is some truth to that, especially at quarterback. He has struggled to do that.
Big D's up next, Jock's Roundtable, as we continue on. What's up, Big D?
What's going on, guys? Y'all doing all right?
Awesome, man. You good?
Man, I'm doing great. I can't complain. Love the show, and by far, 9 o'clock on Thursday is my favorite.
And you like some whip, huh?
Man, I love some whip, and I'm a huge Auburn guy. But, I mean, that guy, I told him the other day, I said, listen, you've got two things. You got to learn how to say I love you back, and you got to remember Piggly Wiggly. Oh, man. But, no, I just want to discuss Auburn real quick. And, Brown, hopefully you're keeping my uncle in line over there.
I try, man.
No, I got a few things, and I'm not good at y'all bear with me. I don't know how to ask questions real well with these call-in deals, but – Malzahn the other day, he made a comment, and he goes, you know, we're going to get this thing, like he always says, turned around at Auburn, and, you know, it's going to be better next year. Well, the sad thing is we're losing just about the whole defense. The sad thing is the whole offensive line's coming back.
And a good punter coming.
our best offensive lineman is a grad transfer from Delaware or wherever he's from. He's leaving, and, I mean – as an Auburn fan and from people that I know, even if you fire the president, whatever, I mean, Alan Green has no say-so at all. I mean, he came in the last minute. I mean, the only way to save face and to have any kind of hope for next year would be not necessarily, it doesn't have to be Hugh Freeze. If it is Hugh Freeze, great, but bring in somebody. Do something where Auburn people can grab hold of hope and say, okay, we're doing something about this. Your system's broken. We're junking it. We're going a completely different route. I think Malzahn can make it if he'll do that. The problem is he can't get out of his own way.
Well, I mean, most of these coaches are hesitant to change. They feel like they've gotten where they are for a reason, and they're ego-driven. And if you make a big change like that, Big D, that's a shot to your ego. That's Gus Malzahn saying, I'm no longer the guy you hired. I'm going to try to be somebody different, but I'm not the guy that you hired because you thought he was the best guy for the job.
And he is 100%, and like I said, I know him. He's 100% control freak. He has the patent for the hurry-up, no-huddle offense, and it's going to be his demise. He's going to go down with the ship because he will not relinquish control of his system, which is broken, doesn't work, and everybody's figured it out. And as all the Alabama people tell me, we run a high school offense.
Thank you, Big D.
Brian in Birmingham is next with us. Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good. How about y'all?
Awesome.
What do you think, and we played a high school football game this Monday in some desolate weather in Pike County. How much do you think a referee could sway a football game?
Oh, boy.
A lot.
Well, and the reason I ask this, you know, Friday we had a terrible incident with our team. I'm sure y'all.
Yeah, so you're a fan of Oakman, and if you didn't hear about it, in the visiting locker room, a wall fell and hit a number of Oakman players to the point they had to postpone the game.
I've not heard an update. Is everyone okay from that?
Yeah, I think everybody is out of the hospital now. Am I right, Brian?
Right. We had one that had surgery, had pins and rods put in his back. We had one that's in a back brace for several months. The other one, which is the three starters, he had shoulder injuries. Not sure yet on what that's going to be. He had an MRI. They're waiting on results. And then had two with lacerations that were able, you know, just to leave the hospital and go home that afternoon.
Yeah, so the second part of the story real quick, they couldn't play the game last Friday night. They had to play it Monday afternoon. And an absolute – I saw video. The worst conditions I've ever seen people play a football game in. I mean,
Yes, we were standing in water on the players and the coaches on the
sideline was standing in standing water.
Wow.
That's where the sideline was a lake. They were standing in water. Mm. I mean, it was terrible conditions.
The reason I ask is this. There were 12 flags dropped on our team, 8 on theirs. None of theirs were illegal procedures. One pass interference. On our 12 flags, 7 of the 12 was dropped by the same guy. 2 touchdowns called back, dropped by the same guy, which was a momentum changer in the game. I was just wondering what
Lost his phone call there. But it can change it a lot.
Well, it can. Now, I'll say this. I think in the playoffs, they bring in officials from outside
your region,
the two regions that are playing.
Yep.
Right? So Oakman was playing Pike County. The officials would be from somewhere that's not near either one of those. So I don't know why an official would have an axe to grind, but I guess if one guy did, he could certainly change it. Yeah.
But why do we not rain out high school football games anymore?
Well, that they had already delayed it from Friday. They had to play it at some point.
How did this wall fall in?
I don't know. That's a bizarre story, Lance. I've seen photos of it, and I still can't figure it out.
Because we were doing the show Friday night.
Yeah.
Our Friday night show, 6 to 8 p.m., Brownie and I, and that story broke, and they covered it with the high school show, Saber and those guys, later that night here, live and local on Jocks 94.5, and we were just amazed that the locker room wall fell on them, and how many people were in the hospital. I mean, you talk about pins in your back and stuff, that's a life-changing injury.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
But I don't guess they could delay it anymore, Jim, because, you know, week two of the playoffs is Friday. I mean, if you punted it to Tuesday, now you've only got 2 days to turn it around, basically. I mean, that's tough.
It's extreme circumstance, but maybe you postpone that game to the next Monday and
maybe so
catch up at some point. But I do want a thought going to break here on Packers and Seahawks tonight. From you, Brownie, what do you think you see tonight in Seattle?
I mean, it's tough to know. These two teams have been really inconsistent. I watched all the Packers games Saturday because they are Sunday, excuse me, they were playing my Dolphins. And boy, on one drive, Rodgers looks vintage Aaron Rodgers, and on another drive, he doesn't. He doesn't have a whole lot of elite receiving help. I just got a gut feeling the Packers win this game. I don't have anything X's and O's to back it up. I just got a gut the Packers win it.
And what about you, LT? Give me Russell Wilson in Seattle. They're hanging into the conversation right now and really doing it, you know, piecing together what used to be a really great organization.
Well, I think there's a couple of factors to look at here. Green Bay has yet to win on the road. Seattle's dropped back-to-back games. They've lost five games this year, but all by one possession or less. So they've been in every single game. It's a really good 4-5 team. And Seattle right now, the most run-heavy offense in the league, number one in rushing with over 152 yards a game. And Green Bay's rush defense, 21st, giving up 4.5 yards per carry. That will be the difference on the road. I don't think Green Bay gets the win here. I like Seattle.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham used to play in Seattle. He's now with the Packers, and he sort of has disappeared a little bit down the stretch in places. Our last big thing brought to you by ERAKing.com. Earlier this week, Georgia, they announced some big schedule changes coming up. Specifically 2029, let's focus in on that, if you will, where they announced they will be playing Texas and Clemson to go along with Georgia Tech as their out-of-conference games. They'll throw one cupcake in unless we were playing 9 SEC games by then.
Which we could be. I don't think that's off the table.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. By 2029, do you think that Georgia's schedule will be the norm or still the outlier of the way schedules will look in the future?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this, Lance, because as it stands today, now I think by 2029, the Auburn situation where they play Alabama and Georgia on the road every year, every other year, and at home every other year, that's going to be rectified by then. But as it stands now, if you just did it based on now, Lance, they would play at Clemson, host Texas, at Auburn, and at Georgia Tech in the same season.
Yeah, I think it's got to be the outlier, Dunaway. And I know there's a belief that one day we're going to get to this point where you've only got Power Fives playing Power Fives. But if you're to play that schedule in the SEC, Texas seems to be building. Clemson isn't going anywhere. And I know 2029 is a long way away. If Georgia Tech gets their next coach right, you play that with an SEC schedule, I don't know how you have any shot of winning championships.
And you don't know who their other crossover game in the West is going to be. I mean, what if it's LSU or Alabama? Or, you know, or somebody's good then. You know, what if it's a year where Mississippi State or Ole Miss is really good?
Or Texas A&M is where they expect Jimbo to have them.
Yeah, in 2029, of those three coaches, obviously Georgia Tech, it won't be Paul Johnson. That's a given.
Right.
But of Kirby Smart at Georgia, Tom Herman at Texas, and Dabo at Clemson, how many are still there?
Well, you left off Gus at Auburn. We're going to discuss that.
That's not going to happen.
Okay.
I'm going to say Kirby is the guy still having to coach the schedule. And that's it.
That's a decade away, man. That's a long time to coach college football. I would go as far as to say there's not a single coach at that school right now that's still there.
I think all three could be there, though. mean, you think about, young enough.
I know Dabo's young, but by then, that's a decade from now. He will have coached at Clemson almost 20 years. That's a long time to coach.
But
now.
Again, where else is he going to go?
Or
he
could retire.
Be, or he could be year 7 at Alabama by then.
Wow.
He's got a big mortgage.
Or year 5 by at Alabama by then.
I mean, Tom Herman at Texas, the way that thing's trending right now, I don't think I'd bet on that at all, would you?
Yeah, how many more times do they have Maryland on their schedule between now and 2029?
I don't know what happens with Texas. I mean, what is can Texas continue just to turn coaches over?
I don't know, but this is a decade. I mean, you let Tom Herman, if this is what we're getting from Tom Herman over the next decade, he won't be there.
There are people like Nick Saban who think maybe 10 conference games are the way to go. And at that point down the road in 2029, you have to start buying contracts out.
They're going
to
drop one of them, right?
Yeah, you already got too many in Texas, at Clemson, and at Georgia Tech. The last question on this I want to ask you. Do you think, because I feel like, and I may be wrong about this, but I feel like Nick Saban has a say-so in Alabama scheduling and has for since he arrived.
Well, he should. I would hope, yeah.
Do you think Kirby Smart has had say-so in this, that he said, yes, I want Texas at Clemson, at Georgia Tech, and the SEC in 2020.
Well, I think it's a little ambitious, but I think he learned from his mentor and Nick Saban that you schedule games like this.
It can help you in recruiting, too. I mean, if you're good and you're playing those kind of games, to me, if I'm an elite athlete, I want to play in those kind of games.
No doubt. And if you're able to go in and wreck Texas in front of their fans, it's a big state.
This would be the type of schedule, though, that a two-loss conference champion could get in the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree.
That people would look at it and say, man, they scheduled hard.
Yeah, they lose to Auburn, they lose to Texas, and they're sitting
and
at
the conference
too. Yeah.
Yeah, by 2029, we could be talking about Georgia sneaking in as a three-loss team into the 16-team playoff, right?
I'm Ryan Kelly with TheHomeLoanExpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert, LLC.